This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is To Hell in a Handbasket. And now, please get ready and welcome your host, Miss Dolly Diamond.
A little yellow basket.
Oh, good evening, everybody, and welcome to Hell in a Handbasket. I am Dolly Diamond, and tonight I'm a little bit excited. I won't pretend I'm not. Mind you, I'm excited every week, and there would be no point doing it, would there? But tonight, I have a musical theatre and cabaret. Well, I'm going to say star, because she's a star in my eyes, and I tell you, by the end of this, she'll be a star in yours. Ladies and gentlemen, I introduce to you now, Melissa Langton. Good evening.
Hello, how are you?
Oh, really, really well.
Of course.
Now, I'm excited to have you here, because I think, well, the beauty of putting together a series of shows like this is to have on people that you admire, and I admire you.
Oh, thank you.
And you know why? I'll tell you why. You didn't ask. I'll tell you. It's because of your voice. And it's not only your voice. It's the way that you put a song across, which is really what musical theatre and cabaret is all about, isn't it?
Yeah. Look, I love doing those kind of musical theatre songs, and I love telling a story. And some people have said before that I'm a little bit over the top, but you know what? I don't care.
No.
I don't care, and it's what I do now. And when people go, oh, well, what about there's a little bit less diction? Or I'm like, no, I'm too old now to change. That's what I do, and so I'm sticking to it.
Well, I don't see why you would change. I mean, you're never going to make everybody happy, are you?
No, that's what I've realised as well. So yeah. I just do what I do. And every now and again I will go, well, you know what, maybe that's right. But often I go, no, that's what I do and I want to do it that way and
well,
I'm happy.
I think it works. And the reason that I like your it's the delivery, as you say, but also you're very, very clever when you pick the songs that you do.
I'm gonna like dispel the myth now that I'm the one doing it all, and I'm gonna say that it's actually Mark. That's my husband, Mark Jones.
Right.
He's my musical director, and before he came along I was singing on my own, and I was singing I Dreamed a Dream from Les Mis, but he's the one that he has reams and reams of music. And actually before my last show, he put together a playlist and he said, oh, just have a listen, I'll put a couple of songs. Well, he'd put 225 songs into a playlist in my iTunes. And so it took me a whole day to like go through them. And he said, now don't just listen to the first 5 seconds. You've got to listen to a good half of it. So each song I went through, and then even then after that, he went, well, you didn't put this on your final list. So he's actually the one that chooses. He gets a lot of songs from podcasts from American radio comedy radio stations. And then he goes, now don't listen to the singer. She's shit. But listen to the song. Think about how you might sing it. So sometimes I have to go, eh. And it's a lot of hillbilly stuff, like you go, I went to the doctor, and you go, just listen to the words and the music. So he's really great at that. So he's actually the one that he has to have all the credit for the material.
All right. No, I like that. Well, yeah. You know, we'll get more about Mark later, won't we?
Hello,
your lovely husband.
Yes.
But I want to start off with you growing up, because it looks to me like you grew up pretty much everywhere.
Yeah.
I think on that list we've got, a lot of overseas, of course, with New Zealand, London, you were in Jakarta, everywhere.
Yeah.
What was all that about?
My dad worked in the oil business. And each time he got a promotion, he'd get moved to a different city. So we lived all around Australia. I think I was born in Melbourne, but we only lived here for 3 months. And then we lived in Kalgoorlie. We lived everywhere. Then when I was 8, we started moving overseas. And we lived overseas for about five or six years. And then when we finished in Jakarta, we'd been there for about 2 years, my dad's next posting was to Chicago, which I was like, exciting.
No.
Even as a 13, 14-year-old, I was like, oh, Chicago. My dad has a bit of a thing about Americans, which is not very fair, but that's just, you know, that generation. I don't know what he thinks, but he didn't. We went to an American school in Jakarta, and I don't think he thought much of the the teaching system. So it's like, no, we're not doing that. I'm going to send you home to boarding school in Brisbane around the corner from your nana.
Oh.
And I totally flipped out because all I knew about my nana was that she, you know, she was very old and she smelt funny and yes, all that kind of stuff. They? Yes. And so all I could think about was that it was going to be hideous. And so I hid in my room for a week and I wouldn't come out.
Wow.
And because of that, Dad said, right, because they were going to move to Chicago without me and send me off to Brisbane.
And you were what age then?
I would have been going into year nine, so oh, that's yes. 14 or something Radio. Like that. And so I would have spent 4 years in Mount Cutha in Brisbane at some girls' school which I'd seen. It was up on a hill.
Oh.
And I cried for a week and I said, I'm not doing it, I'm not going. And so, when you're a kid at the time, you don't realise how big a decision can be, but it meant that he couldn't take that job. He had to actually quit the whole company and move and decided to move to an Australian-based company, which was Melbourne, and that's
now,
what we've been
about. I think if I'd given that a go, I would have been, you know, I'd have been given a good hiding. I don't know if I'd have got away with that.
Mum says to me, like years later, Mum actually said that they were ready to leave anyway. And Dad never wanted to go to Chicago because right. he didn't like America or Americans. And
well,
so,
I think a lot of people consider them to be loud and brash, don't they? I love yeah. that, obviously.
I love
know.
It too.
Yes.
And
maybe it's because we're loud and brash, is it?
I'm the black sheep of the family. Right. My yeah. sister and my brother are hermits and my parents are very, very quiet and I'm the black sheep.
Right.
So I was quite keen to go to Chicago. But Mum said to me years later that it wasn't such a big deal because he already really didn't want to go. She didn't want to go. And so I guess I sort of, you know, was the exclamation mark at the end of the sentence. It was like, let's just
all right, we're not going,
home.
Yeah.
Yeah, let's just go home. And I think Mum had been traipsing around, you know, the world and she was a bit over it. And so,
yes.
you know.
Did it make for a difficult schooling then up until that age? Because then when you got to Melbourne, you were at Ivanhoe Girls
yeah,
Grammar, weren't you?
Yeah, so it was year nine that I started Ivanhoe Girls.
I think when you're younger than that, it doesn't really matter as much, does it?
Well, I don't know, because it affected my brother a lot.
Right.
I remember lots of trouble with him. He'd run away from school all the time and he actually ran away from home. When we were in London, he ended up in Scotland at one point.
Wow.
With a truck driver. Not with a truck driver, oh, but, you know.
Well, I was going to say, I've done that.
With the lift from a truck driver.
All right, yes.
But I really liked it. There was one school I didn't like because I think I went to this school and there were no winter uniforms left, so I had to wear a summer uniform. Oh. And you know what it's like with teenagers. If you're different,
yes.
then, you know, that you get ostracised. Well, I was completely ostracised because of this stupid school uniform.
Yeah.
And I had an American accent. So because when it's amazing.
You learnt that way, haven't you?
Well, the thing is that with accents, I always found that as a kid, A, you pick them up really quickly.
Yes.
But B, if you want to fit in, then you tend to sort of try and be the same as everybody else. And in fact, one of the things I see in myself, even to this day, is sort of, I guess, from those years of having to fit in, is I do tend to sometimes not say what I think and sort of fit in so that I, because Mark always says, oh, it's because you just want everyone to like you. And I'm sure that's a hangover from the days of having to fit in. I mean, I'd go to schools for a year and a half. So
right,
if
yes.
I didn't try to fit in, I'd spend the
you
whole year and a half.
You have no mates.
Yeah.
Well, I'm like that. I don't like to. Well, no, actually, I'm lying. But I am. When you're younger, you do that a little bit more, don't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, I really did. And that's so I sort of spent 5 or 6 years thinking that's how life was.
Yes.
And I still, even especially when I went to uni, I found that because I went to uni for a little while and I wasn't in the course that I wanted to be in, and I just tried to like everybody and have everyone like me and pretend to like what I was doing and what they were doing. And it's only in the last 10 years I've probably been able to admit that, but it's still really hard to change.
Yes, exactly. I'm talking with a very lovely Melissa Langton now. I want to get on to one of your handbasket questions in a minute, what
okay.
you want to go in.
Yep.
Because looking at your life, it's not all been a bed of roses in the beginning, has it? It's not all been musical theatre and cabaret like a lot of performers, and I include myself in that because I know that you were at William Angliss College for a while studying and things like that. But they're the things that make us, don't you think?
I think they are. I think... you have to go through a whole bunch of different things before you work out what it is that you really want. Going through what you don't want makes you realise what you do want, I think.
I was brought up that way. You know, my dad would always say, look, if you're not happy, go out, get yourself a job, and then you'll work out that you don't like doing that, and you'll work out what you do want to do.
Yeah.
I think that's why I'm at Joy. I can't be certain, but I think it is.
Still haven't worked it out.
I haven't. I'm still not sure. Now, let's get on to it. What would you like to be number one for the possibility of going to hell in a handbasket? What can't you live with?
I guess one thing that's happened recently, or in the last 5 or 6 years, is that I sometimes have to deal with, because we've got, Mark and I've got a little 9-year-old boy. He's not little anymore. He's up to my shoulders nearly. I have to deal with a lot of parents who don't quite understand what I do for a job. So if I go, oh, I'm going away for 3 weeks, they're like, oh, what's going to happen to Tyler?
Yes.
And I say, oh, well, you know, he'll be with Mark. Or sometimes if Mark and I are going away, he's with my mum. And they're shocked. And I get quite disapproving looks. And it's without actually asking. So they don't sort of try to understand what I do. I guess it's judgment, you know. And we all do it. Mm-hmm. I do it, but I hate that judgmental feeling from parents that they're thinking, "Oh my God, you know what? That poor little boy."
Yes,
and often they say, "Oh, Mark's going to be with him." And they're like, "But you're his mother." I'm like, "Oh, what's Mark? In fact, Mark's a wonderful dad." And that's one of my big gripes, is I often get that, you know, that look of, and that,
being judged as an unfit mother.
Yeah. And I don't like going. In fact, the most I went away, I think I went away for 4 weeks when he was 2. That's the longest spell I had.
Which isn't very long at all.
It's not long in the grand scheme of things. And Mark was there pretty much the whole time with him.
Yes.
Except for a week, I think, when he was working. But he'd still at night see him. But the judgment I got from some of the mums. And because the thing is that you don't really have a choice. And
well, if you want to work.
And the thing about it, I guess the thing about our industry, which I guess they don't quite get, is, you have to take the work. But more than that, he's totally well adjusted.
Yes.
And I never make anything up. I always say, this is what I'm doing. I'm going away and we're going to Skype. Skype's a wonderful thing.
Yes.
We're going to Skype each night so that you know what I'm doing. And I tell him what I'm doing. And I say, Daddy's going to be here and you can ring me anytime. And I'll say, I'm going to miss you and I love you, all that kind of stuff. I don't try and flower it. I say, and he'll go, why are you going away? And I'll say, well, you know, we talk about the house and how we've got to pay the house off and all that kind of stuff. So he gets it.
Realistic, isn't it?
Yeah. I think that's important. So many parents, I watch them, treat their children, here's me being judgmental, treat their children like, it's like all that baby stuff, like, oh, you're too young, and when children ask questions to say, oh, don't worry about that. There's only one question that Tyler's asked me that I haven't answered, which is the obvious question, which is he said, we're talking about babies and initially it got to the question of, but how does the sperm get to the egg?
Oh, my word.
I know, and I was like, look at that butterfly.
Yes.
And then I just see it at
work. Mummy's going away again.
Yes. So I just think that you have to be honest with kids. And if they're old enough to ask, they're old enough to know almost, except for that one thing.
Well, I mean, and what it is you're only going away for brief periods of time. Yeah. What I don't like is exactly what you said, though, people that judge you on your life choices like that. Yeah. And yours is it's a very good reason to be going away. You're not suggesting he go to some boarding school in Brisbane.
Never.
And live with his nan, smelly nan. But I think, I've no doubt in my mind that, well, I think I'm worried about the friends that you're keeping, if they're the kind that roll their eyes like that. I won't have that.
Yes.
You're way too nice to have judgmental friends. It's around the school gates, isn't
it? Yeah, it was the kinder.
Oh, yes. No, yes. Yes. Yeah. Yes. So. The yummy mummies.
No.
You know, no, they're not, are they?
No, I didn't find them fun at all.
Hideously yucky. But I have no doubt in my mind, Melissa Langton, that they are definitely judgmental people like that are going straight to hell in a handbasket. Yes. Yes, no, well, no doubt in my mind. We won't have that. Now, I want to go back to it because, yes, you did your time at William Angliss College, and what I liked has been hotel management. Well, you know, it's always handy, but I think you did about, well, just under a couple of years there,
yeah,
because you just didn't like it, and you didn't like, I love that you wrote this, you didn't like anyone in your class.
Not one person.
Well, why would you? I mean, although sometimes you do something like that, and you might make one, you know, you get one mate out of it, don't you?
Yeah.
You never know.
Yeah.
But, I mean, they're not going to enjoy the sort of, you know, you've got nothing in common generally.
Yeah, I think it was partly my fault,
right,
because I think right from the start I thought, I don't think this is right.
Mm.
I don't think this is what I want to do. And I did think that I wanted to do it. I did think I want to be a hotel manager or something along those lines. But as soon as I got there, I thought, oh, this is not what I want to do. And in fact, it was literally a month after I started that one of the things that I do when I don't like something is I try and distract myself with something else. And so if I'm not enjoying, like, and it's typical if I have to learn words or, you know, do the tax or something,
yes,
I distract myself with something else. So that's when I first distracted myself with theatre. And the only theatre I'd done is in year 11 I did Bye Bye Birdie.
Oh,
and because I went to a girls' school, I was Albert.
Right,
so I,
yes,
played the male lead. And I hadn't done anything since. And I was reading a newspaper and it said Catchment Players auditioning for Annie.
Oh.
And I'd seen something. I must have seen a show or something. And I thought, oh, I love Miss Hannigan. I loved that role. Of course, I was way too young, but, you know, I think I was 19. And
but at least you were realistic enough to know that you wouldn't be Annie.
Yeah.
I mean, I still have pangs for that role.
Sadly, I think I sang Tomorrow at the audition. I know, it's so sad because I didn't know what I was doing. I just went along and all of this was to distract myself. I had no interest in theatre, so I thought. And I was a month into this course, which I thought, oh, my God, I've done the wrong thing. Distract, you know, and auditioned for Annie and Catchment Plays. And at that point, because Catchment Plays is quite a big amateur company,
yes,
now, but at that point it was in Reservoir High School. So it was in the school hall and, you know, backstage was the whole sporting sort of, you know, the big silver tubs of,
right,
water, la, la, la. And I got in and I guess that was the start of it. I think because I was having such not a fun time at William Angliss, not really meeting people, not really making friends, I went to the Annie and I made friends instantly and we were partying and it was – and I've still got a lot of friends from Annie,
yes,
now.
Yes, that's exactly what you wanted.
And I
now,
started,
were you Mrs. Hannigan?
No. Because I'd never done anything and I was only 19.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Annie's not the best show for ensemble. I think I was on stage 3 times.
Oh.
But I was the two of the times I was on, the one time I was on, my role was called a star to be. So that was, I don't know if that was, not that I'm a star or anything, but that was, I guess, on the way to what I wanted to do, which was to do theatre. And the other one was the Boylan Sisters, which is that, which is 3 girls, which I've done a lot of that work. But so I was only on stage 3 times, but I had the best fun. I don't know, I couldn't do it now, but we used to, I'd go to uni all day, then I'd do the show, and then I'd party all night after the show, and then I'd go, I don't know how I did it. I couldn't do that now.
Well, we were young.
I must have been. The thought of doing that now makes me just, I don't know how I did it. But it was so much fun, and I didn't look back, and that was when, I guess, the seed was planted, and also I started missing a couple of classes, and, you know,
I don't want to do this anymore.
I didn't want to do it, but I was sort of, not being forced, but I was being pressured by my parents. Well, that's their job, you know,
yes,
to stay.
Oh, it's something to fall back on, isn't it? That's what,
yeah,
was the old mantra, wasn't
that
it?
That was the old mantra. But at the time, I think in the course we were doing legal and business studies, that's just not anywhere near what I want to do. And so I think I lasted, I definitely went the first year. The second year, even in the first term, I started to, and there was probably halfway through that, I didn't go back after that.
See, I see hotel managers, you know, when we travel about and do our gigs and things like that, and they seem to be just wandering around.
Yes.
I could just, well, look, drinking wine
I
and
know.
Things. I could do that.
Well, that's sort of what we did in the course as well. A lot of that stuff, I just didn't understand. I was like, what's the point of this?
Yes.
And so I didn't.
That's a boring hotel. I don't want to work at that one. I want to work where they just drink the wine.
I know. Not all this stupid accounting. No. Accounting, I was like, ugh, didn't get all the ledgers. And I was
I want to talk because you were briefly a travel agent. Now, I think, was it while you were a travel agent that you and auditioned for Les Mis? Tell us about that. I like this story.
Yeah.
It's like something I do. That's why I like it.
I auditioned for Les Mis. Well, there's two stories. The first time I did an audition, I auditioned for Les Mis, and I didn't know what I was doing. And I went along and I got a recall. I didn't even know what a recall was at the time.
I don't.
And I had to go again. So I went again. And then I got another recall. And I was like, oh, this is interesting. And so at the third audition, the director was there, so it was the last audition, so it was the big one.
Yes.
But this being my first ever, I don't even know how I got onto doing the audition. So this is actually when I was quite young, so I was still only 19 at this point that I did this audition. So I had no idea what I was doing. And the director, who was the London director, said, I love you. I love you and you're wonderful. And here's what I want you to do. I want you to go away and I want you to lose some weight for me. And we love you for the role of Eponine. And so, of course, I thought, right, that's my career. That's what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. I'm going to be Eponine.
I've done it.
This is fantastic. So I went away and I lived on, I remember broccoli soup. I had a lot of broccoli soup and lettuce and all these things. And I looked fabulous. I looked like a supermodel.
Right.
And I told everybody that I was going to be Eponine and I miss everybody because I didn't know what I was doing. I thought, wow, this is what's going to happen. And so 6 months later, they had auditions again and I went in. That director wasn't even there, you know, for a whole bunch of people I didn't know. And I sang and they said, thank you. And I stood and I didn't and I was like, this seems like
What about the broccoli soup?
What about the soup? And look at me. Yes. And I looked awesome. And I thank God I didn't say anything like, but what about Eponine?
Yes, I think you should like have. Probably shouldn't have.
I walked out and I was still sort of in shock because I was 19. You know, if that was me now, I'd go, ugh. And because that's what it's like.
You've got to toughen up, haven't you, in that business?
But at the time, and because I told everybody I was going to be Eponine and Les Mis.
Yes.
I was mortified. And that's, in fact, why I became a travel agent. So I had done a little bit of work, but after that I thought, I don't need this.
No.
And so I just got back into the eating, you know.
Screw the broccoli.
Absolutely. The broccoli got thrown out the window. And I took on a full-time travel agent work and thought, I'm just going to stay in amateur theatre because it's fun and I can party and there's no pressure. And that was my very first and one and only audition for a long time. Like I was 19 and then I didn't audition then for years and years and years. And but I lived through it, you know. Nobody said what happened to Eponine, you know, when are we going to see you? And I was a travel agent for a number of years. And then finally, the only reason I went for another audition is because a friend of mine said, I'm going to audition for this new superstar, Jesus Christ Superstar, and I'd done it as an amateur show and loved it.
Yes.
And she said, but I'm really scared and I don't want to go by myself. And so I said, I'll come. She said, why don't you go in? It's open. It's one of those open calls. And I was like, And then I decided at the last minute I would. And so we auditioned and I got a recall and ended up getting in and she didn't.
Oh, no.
And I've never seen her since. And she was, I don't know what she thought, but she clearly thought I might have got her part or something. I don't know.
Yes.
But, and I got in and I was completely unprepared because I still had my travel job and I was reasonably happy. You know, I didn't mind it. It involved people. It was nice. And I was doing amateur theatre. But that was, I guess, the start. So I sort of got into it by default. That had never happened nowadays. It's so hard to get in. But in a sense, I got in by default.
Well, there's no default. You got in because you were bloody good.
There was funny auditions, though.
The moral of the story is obviously never take a mate with you to an audition.
No, never.
Never.
Never. I've never done it and I'll never do it just in case.
Hey, guess what? I'm going on audition. Come with me.
I never tell people now
because the only time you ever mention an audition to somebody is if they're absolutely nothing anything like what you're like.
If it's a man.
Or if it's the opposite it's sex. You know, exactly. And, well, that's funny, though. So not even a word from the girl.
No. I never saw her again, and she was very put out. I don't know. I can't really quite remember, but I just remember that I hadn't seen her since. And
I always worry when I get like a pain or a little jolt or something in my body that that someone's making a voodoo doll of me.
Yeah, stabbing it.
I wonder whether she's made a voodoo doll of
me. Maybe she did.
Yeah.
I wish I don't know what's happened to her or anything, but I don't think she's done theatre because I haven't seen her around. So, but it was my first show, and you know, that was the one with John Farnham and Kate Soprano.
Wow. Well, we had Kate Soprano on a little while ago.
And she's a lovely
lady.
Awesome. Yeah, she was such a great lady, and she used to give champagne out every night of the show because all the principals used to get a bottle of Bolle.
You know, she brought us nothing.
Oh, that's nothing. It. I'm having
and
words.
I like a drink. I like
and
a drink,
bottle
Melissa.
Of Bolle. I do like a bottle of Bolle.
Yes,
because you know if you're going to have champagne.
Yes. Now I'm going to ask what your second-hand basket one is. I would imagine you could put broccoli soup on there really quite easily, but I don't think it's on there. What's the next one?
I have to say that I don't like drama. I don't like people who cause drama.
Oh,
for no reason.
All right.
But, you know, there's a lot of it in theatre, and it's the whole, you know, causing drama in the rehearsal room and causing drama on stage. It's just no need. In fact, in life, let's face it, on stage. For me, I can't understand drama. I just think that you just deal with stuff and decor. If you make a drama out of things, then it's just you're just causing more drama.
Now,
drama.
This is coming from someone who hid in their bedroom.
Yes,
and it wouldn't come out.
That's true.
I was younger, and
let's face it, I was going to be sent to boarding school next to my
Smelly
nana.
Nan, yes, Smelly Nan. But I mean, I am. So it's people that just, you know, in general, make the mountain out of molehills.
Yeah,
and things like that.
And especially performers.
Because we've all, it is a lot of them, isn't it? We've all done it every now and again.
Yeah.
But as you get older, I think isn't it easier not to do it? You realise.
Yep.
That life is so much easier with a lot less drama, isn't it?
Yeah, and I actually find that people will employ you more because you're easy to work with. And I'm not saying that you should be a pushover.
Hold on, let me write that down. Yeah, there we go. That's written down.
Tip number one.
Yes.
Maybe sometimes I am a pushover in that if it's something that I really should be protesting about, I just think, you know what, I just get through it, deal with it. And I think you do get employed more because you don't cause and I don't so when I mean drama I do mean I'm not doing it like that. I get really like, oh, just do it. And you know, unless you have a firm belief that you're gonna look like an idiot, although, you know, let's face it, I've done many shows where I look like an idiot.
Yes.
But you know,
I think I am. I have a flair for the dramatic, and but I actually do believe that it's going to kill a lot of people listening to this. But I generally believe that I can be quite easygoing when it comes to my work ethic.
Yep.
I like to get things done, and it's always irritating when other people sort of put up objections and on just a purely dramatic level.
Yeah, that's what I don't like.
Exactly right. Well, then I have not a doubt in my mind that it's your second one. Second one. I'm going straight to hell in a handbasket. Oh, you picked a couple of good ones there.
Wow.
Now, of course, a wonderful time in Jesus Christ Superstar. Yeah. How long did that run for then?
Well, initially it was supposed to be four shows. So we were booked for two Melbourne shows and two Sydney shows. But you know, months before we even started rehearsal, they all sold out. And so I think, I'm not exactly sure how many, but I'm pretty sure it was 80-something shows. And we would crisscross the country because they'd just add dates. So it wasn't your normal sort of 8-show-a-week thing. We'd do a Tuesday night here and then we'd fly to Perth and do Thursday night and then we'd fly to Brisbane. And we were back and forth. And so for someone's first show, although I was 25, so I was a late starter.
Yes.
It was so exciting.
Yes.
And
well, what an amazing cast, though, wasn't it?
Watching
everybody.
Everybody.
From, you know,
the ensemble. It was a great ensemble as well because I think they'd purely picked everybody. You know, it's not like today where you have to be able to dance and act.
Yes.
singers. They'd literally just chosen singers. There was not even a certain look in the cast because it was the concert version. There wasn't all thin girls or all big girls or all this or whatever. There was everything. You name it, there were all different shapes and sizes.
Well, which like
was so
life,
awesome.
Isn't it?
It was so great.
Why the
so
hell
great.
Have we gone that way where it has to be carbon copies of everything?
I don't know, but I've only done one or two of those shows where it's been, you know, carbon copy, like you have to just fit into the person's shoes.
Yes.
Literally get into their shoes or they weren't hiring.
Well, a lot of them are like that now, though, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. And there's shows where they've just gone, I'll watch the video, you know, and do what she does. Or, you know, and that's when I just think, I don't want to do that because then I feel the pressure.
Well, that's not us, is it? We may as well be doing our other. Well, I worked in a magic shop briefly, Melissa. So we may as well be in the magic shop or in the travel agents. It's not what we want.
Or working at the drive-through McDonald's, which was what I've always done.
Did you? Yes.
I have.
I wouldn't mind. Although a little while ago, I wouldn't have minded that. I'm quite partial to it, but not at the moment. You know, trying to be good, trying to get my body back for Christmas. Not the one coming. My guest is Melissa Langton. We're learning a lot about you, aren't we?
Yeah, more than I think I've ever told anybody.
I know, all the guests say that, and that's why I love
it's
it.
You.
It's nice, though, isn't it? You get to, to share a little bit, and people
it's
get
nice.
To know more about you. Yeah. We have no difficulty talking about ourselves,
that's
generally,
for
do
sure.
we? We talked about Mark Jones, your husband. Now, he was in The Phones, which was a very well-known a cappella group.
Yeah.
He was sort of their lead young man, wasn't he?
He was very handsome.
Yes.
Oh, well, he still is, of course.
Yes, of course. No, I know what you mean, though, because I remember going and watching him and thinking, what a hottie.
I know. I did. And I tend to like talented men. Like, I love men who can play the piano.
Oh,
like
yes.
Any man that I watch playing the piano.
Yes, because he's an amazing piano player isn't he?
But beautiful voice. And I remember what it was because it was like, was there a bicentennial, 1988?
Yes.
And it was a concert and he was singing with The Phones. I can see him on stage, but it was outside. I think it was like in Reservoir or something. They'd made an appearance. And I think I was doing the amateur Jesus Christ Superstar and we'd done a song.
Right.
And so I saw him perform and thought, oh, he is so handsome. And met him because he was seeing a friend of mine at the time and met him through this friend. And what happened then?
You stole him. That's what happened?
No, because you know what? We were actually friends for a really long time.
All
so,
right.
Yeah,
it's all right.
I sort of didn't see him for a year or two, and then he musically directed a concert, and we became really, really good friends, and we were friends for a really long time. In fact, it must have been 10 years because if I met him in 88, we didn't actually start going out till 98.
Right.
So we were friends and then we became really good friends. You know, the kind of friend that you call every day on the phone and you just sort of start to become this couple.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden we became a couple and it wasn't that kind of thing where you go on a date and all that kind of thing. And it just worked and... Yeah, and so...
Well, it worked to the point where you got married in New York.
Yeah, we
did.
In
2001 in City Hall. I loved that.
Yeah, we did. And because we went up to New York and neither of us are really... I've never wanted a white wedding. And, you know, anyone who knows Mark would know that there's no way he'd stand in a church and have a white wedding. And he's a very private person. And so we got to New York and he said, well, you know, why don't we get married? And he actually said that. I don't know if anybody knows the movie You've Got Mail.
Yes.
Where she goes and she puts the rose in the book and waits for her person who she's been talking on the internet with. And so we went to that cafe and decided that we were going to get married. And you have to go to New York City Hall and you have to live 24 hours. So you have to apply and then you have to go away and come back because I guess they think that if people are drunk and, you know.
Yes, if only Britney Spears had done that.
Yes, yes. Well, what happened is that we had this lovely couple in front of us and they must have been in their 70s and she obviously didn't know. They obviously didn't know and she had almost a beehive.
Oh, no.
And the full makeup and everything. And she said, what do you mean we have to come back in 24 hours? Anyway, they were going down in the
was
lift
she
with
German?
Us. She was Jewish.
Oh.
They were a lovely Jewish couple. Oh, that was clear because he didn't say anything the whole time. And Mark and I was fascinated. We were fascinated to know whether they actually ever made it back. So we don't know. But she was all the way down in the lift. you know, she was very cross with him. I've got my hair done on my nails and I didn't know. And I was all the while, and Mark and I like, in the lift going, well, we're from Australia and we knew.
Yes.
So, you know, you need to do your research a bit. And so we went back the next day and got married, and our celebrant was Mexican. And she, we couldn't understand what she said. And she said, do get a man to be love with the husband. And now put another man and wife, no make it the bride. And we're like, and Mark said, I wasn't sure whether I was getting married or ordering a taco. And so it was, it's, I'll always remember it. And we went out for Mexican dinner in
Celebrant. Oh, yeah, too. You
know, yeah.
Back at the Celebrant.
In honor of our Celebrant.
Where she lived, yeah.
And it was just something we'll never forget. And much more than, and we came home and had a little party, you know, with our family. And our, neither of our families were upset that we'd done it or anything. We sent a fax, you know, it was faxes in those days. We didn't have mobiles. And we sent a fax home, we got married. And, yeah, we've never looked back. I mean, I guess like any couple, you know, we have our ups and downs.
Oh, yes.
But, yeah, it's been really great, and I think we make a really good partnership because we were such great friends from the start.
Yes, that was your foundation.
It was, based on friendship. So, yeah, it's been
great. Now we've got one last one to go in the hand basket. Well, I don't know, because not one guest has had all three go in.
Oh,
so
no.
We'll have a look. It's a challenge.
The pressure.
What is it?
I hate doing the laundry.
Oh.
I'm more than happy to pick it all up, and I'm more than happy to put it in the machine. I'm more than happy to put it out on the wash and on the line and then put it in the basket. But as for putting it away, it's my least favourite thing in the world is putting away laundry. It's pathetic.
So you mean it's on the line.
I'll take it off and put it in the basket.
Now it's in the basket.
Yeah. In fact, I've had laundry sitting there in my room for 3 days now. So the basket gets bigger and bigger, filled with clean clothes. And I just will not.
And what about the ironing? Do we mind the ironing then?
Oh, I don't
know.
No,
I don't know.
I don't even know where the ironing is.
No, well, I'm generally of a size where I put something on and it fills out the creases. So I'm lucky that way. And I won't buy something that needs a lot of ironing.
No, who wants to iron?
No.
And Mark can iron his own shirts.
Yes, and if you're going to something special like a wedding or something, then I don't mind, you know, because it's a bit of that rigmarole, and I'll open a bottle of something and, you know, by the time I've finished ironing, I'm drunk, so I don't care, you know. But, all right, well, now, hold on. Your son, is it Tyler, isn't it?
Yes.
Now, how old is Tyler?
He's 9.
Isn't Tyler of an age where he could be persuaded for pocket money to be doing, you know, washing put away?
But I'm a control freak, and so I think I just stand there and go, no, it shouldn't go in there. It can't go in there. What are you doing? I'm a bit of a control freak.
Right.
So I don't think that would work, and I can't for the life of me get Mark to do it.
No.
So I don't know, but it's pathetic. I don't know. Well, I'm a control freak.
He doesn't like it either.
He doesn't know. He puts it away wrong as well. So, in fact, look, I'm just pathetic, aren't I? So
No. But I am here to judge. And, you know, so don't give yourself your own, you know. But it is a tricky one there. And, of course, you know, you probably wouldn't want a cleaner in either, because they probably wouldn't do it right.
No, as I'm saying all these things out loud, I'm realising I'm a control freak. I don't even think I could have a cleaner.
No.
Because they wouldn't clean the things the way I'd want it to be done.
Yes, exactly.
I'm a control freak. Well, I'm just realising.
Now, it wasn't because I said no when it got three. If it had been one that I could have gone with, I would have gone with it.
Oh, no.
But it's the fact that you don't, if you don't want somebody else to do it, that means you've got to do it. And I know you don't like it, but I'm sorry, I can't put that in, because if you're a control freak, then you've got to be controlled by your freakishness, and that means it cannot go to hell in a handbasket.
Oh, no.
I'm sorry. Well, no, but 2 out of 3, that's good,
that's
isn't
right.
it?
That's all right.
You know, and well, it's something for you to. Well, listen, now, before we go, I'm giving the wind up. I've got to talk. I can't believe we've not had enough talk about you in the fabulous singlets.
Yes.
Because I saw you perform at the comedy club, many, many years ago. And my goodness, you were hilarious in that group. Wonderful.
Such a great show.
Well, people listening and watching now, why don't you Google the fabulous singlets? Because, what a group.
And
unbelievable.
Great opportunities.
Because
it's been since 1994 now that I've been with Singlets. So that's what, That's nearly 20 years.
Unbelievable.
It's amazing. Great group and great girl, great harmonies, yes. Great singing. I've been everywhere. It's fantastic.
Exactly my kind of group, and I know a lot of people would love them. But also you're doing some shows. Oh, I whistled.
Oh, you whistled.
Okay. Funny, it was in tune. You're doing some shows for Midsummer.
Yeah, I'm doing A Singer Must Die, which is a show I did in Fringe.
Yes, it was wonderful.
Thank you.
It was wonderful.
And it was at Chapel of Chapel, so I'm going to do a couple of return shows. Again, because we loved doing it. Yes. So we'll do that during Midsummer.
Well, midsummer.org.au for all those details. There's a wonderful guide out, and you check it all out online anyway. That's what people do now, isn't it? Listen, that's about it, I'm afraid. I cannot believe that hour's gone so quickly.
I know, and Mark said to me, hey, can I talk about yourself for an hour?
You managed.
I did.
It's not difficult. Well, it's not difficult because, and with that music as well. Well, you've been lovely having you on, Melissa.
Thank you so much.
Joy to have you on.
Thank you.
Thanks for being part of To Hell in a Handbasket. We hope you can join us again soon. To Hell in a Handbasket is not tested on animals, unless they truly deserve it. This has been a Big Mouth Media production in conjunction with Joy 94.9 and Dolly Diamond.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.